We are going to talk about play this hour and why our guest says it's so important. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 18th. But first, I feel like doing some cartwheels right now, if I could do cartwheels, because our risky half the time pledge drive ended last night and it was almost a complete success. We raised almost all the money we usually do in a pledge drive that is twice as long. We were shooting for $1 million. We raised more than $980,000, which is really amazing in just 6 days. Thanks to the 9,000 plus listeners who contributed during the Half the Time pledge drive. And thank you if you are a current or an ongoing contributor too, or if you woulda, if you coulda. It is not too late to pledge. You can still do so online at WPR.org. Your financial support funds all of the programs that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now, let's talk about playtime as we get ready for school and for work. Do children today get enough playtime? And are there really serious consequences if kids don't play enough? I was surprised when I read a recent article in The Atlantic that described how playtime was declining for kids today, and how depression and anxiety is rising, and how overprotective parents who overschedule their children are actually harming the kids. We will wonder what you think about the importance of playtime at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Peter Gray, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College. He was guest editor of the current edition of the American Journal of Play. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks very much for being with us. So talk about why play is so important for children.
Well, you know, children come into the world just primed to play. I mean, that's almost the definition of childhood, is that they desire to play and explore. They're playful, they're curious, and there's a good reason why they come into the world that way. Throughout the history of humanity, play has been the way that children learn about the world around them. It's the way by which, especially the way by which they learn to get along with other people as equals, how they learn to solve problems themselves, problems rather than have adults solve all their problems for them. It's how they learn to negotiate with other people. It's how they learn to regulate their emotions, because they want to play with others. They control their fear and their anger so that they can get along with other people. Play serves an enormous number of roles in children's development and learning. And throughout most of history, people recognized that. That was no surprise to people. Everybody recognized, of course, children need to play. Of course, there were times in history, in some places in history, where children worked all the time and their play was suppressed. But in places where children didn't have to work all the time, and certainly in hunter-gatherer cultures, the kind of culture in which we evolved as human beings, where our genetic nature was developed. And in such cultures, the understanding among adults is that children need to play and explore most of the day, and that's how they learn what they need to know to develop into competent adults.
Yeah.
We seem to have forgotten that in recent times in our culture, and we don't allow children, not because we make them work at in sweatshops or on farms, but because we think for their own good, we need to protect them from running around and doing things on their own. So we have, ironically, for their own good, been depriving children of play.
Yeah, what evidence is there that kids are playing less than they used to?
Well, of course, for somebody who's my age, it's no mystery at all. I mean, we've seen it over the decades. But the evidence comes from a number of different sources. Historians looking at documents, researchers who have done such such studies as the following. For example, Rhonda Clements at Hofstra University did a study a few years ago in which she asked a sample, a cross-sectional sample of parents in this country, how many hours a day their own children play outdoors without adult supervision. And then she asked them, well, when you were your child's age, how many hours did you play outdoors? And the number of hours that the parents played outdoors was more than twice what their own kids play outdoors. And if she were to ask grandparents, she would have found an even bigger discrepancy, because the older the person is, when you ask them, the longer they were playing outdoors. So that's one line of evidence. Of course, memories aren't perfect. So there's other evidence as well. There's actually was a study done at the University of Michigan, both in 1981, and then they repeated the same study 16 years later, in which they asked parents to actually document in using a diary format every day how many hours or how much time their child played. And over that 16-year period, there was a 25% decline in the play of children aged 6 to 8.
And we are talking about playing outdoors, not playing on the couch, a video game on the couch.
Well, that particular study included all forms of play. They didn't even separate. So even if you include video game play, there was still a decline in total play. In fact, there was a decline in total amount of free time that the kids had. Kids were spending more time doing homework, believe it or not, 6 to 8 year olds doing homework, unheard of in the past, but now they're spending a significant amount of time doing that. The amount of time going shopping with their parents, things where they're under direct control by their parents, as opposed to being free to play and explore with other kids without direct supervision by adults.
So what are the consequences of kids today not getting enough playtime?
Well, one thing that we know is over this same, there's been a steady decline in play since the 1950s. It's been more or less a linear decline in play to the degree that historians of play have been able to document that. Over that whole period, it's a very large decline in play. Over that same historical period, we have seen a rise in various forms of psychopathology among children and young adults. We see an increase in depression, an increase in anxiety disorders, an increase in narcissism, a decrease in empathy. These changes have all been documented using standard instruments which have been unchanged over the years. So we're not talking about simply the increased diagnosis of disorders. We're talking about the increased incidence of these disorders in the population as measured by unchanged measures. So, for example, there's an instrument designed to assess anxiety called the Taylor's Manifest Anxiety Scale, which has been unchanged since the 1950s. And by that measure, anxiety at a clinical level among children and adolescents has increased about sixfold. Using a similar kind of measure from clinical assessment tool called the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, depression has increased eightfold between about 1955 and today among adolescents and also among children. In fact, the increased percentage of children under the age of 14 who are clinically depressed today by such measures is even greater than that for teenagers. So that's not, of course, I'm not saying that every child today is depressed or anxious at a clinical level, but these changes have really been very, very dramatic. Let me just give you an example here. So some of these questions over the years have remained constant. These are given to normative samples. So for example, in on the MMPI, there's a question that a statement here, which they if you're taking this questionnaire, if you're doing this questionnaire, you would say you'd have a choice of strongly agree or strongly disagree or somewhere in between that. Here's one of the questions. I work under a great deal of tension. Now, in 1948, 16% of 14 to 16-year-olds agreed with that, so the great majority disagreed. By 1989, 42% agreed with that statement. Here's another one, even a little more stressing. I'm afraid I am losing my mind. In 1948, only 4% of teenagers, 14 to 16-year-olds, agreed with that. By 1989, 23% agreed with that. Almost one out of every four kids in the age range from 4 to 16 agreed with the statement, I'm afraid I am losing my mind, and so on and so forth, yeah. Questions like that. So this is a terrible situation. I mean, children should not be feeling like they're under terrible tension. They should not be feeling like they're afraid they're losing their mind. This is really something to be quite concerned about.
Yeah, and let me take a short pause here as we continue to talk about why play time is declining and why this matters so very much. Peter Gray is our guest, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College. He was the guest editor of the current edition of the American Journal of Play. And we welcome your questions and your reactions to these findings. 1-800-642-1234. Do you think kids aren't getting the playtime they used to? And what should we do about that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers in the Northwoods, a slight chance of rain elsewhere. Highs today, low 40s in the north to the low 50s in the south. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
Our guest this hour says kids are not getting the amount of free playtime that they need, and this lack of playtime for kids has very serious consequences. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 21 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 18th. Our guest is Peter Gray. He is an emeritus professor of psychology at Boston College. We are talking with him about play, in part because we noticed an article in The Atlantic about this issue, All Work and No Play, Why Your Kids Are More Anxious and Depressed, it is titled. And we're wondering why this is and what needs to be done about it, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up in our next hour, by the way, we are going to be talking about the recall effort against Governor Scott Walker. We will hear from leaders from each party, the Republicans and the Democrats, coming up after 7 o'clock. Before we go to the phones, Professor Gray, why is it that this playtime has been declining since the 1950s?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. One is that for a variety of reasons, parents are much more frightened of allowing their children to go outdoors unsupervised. When I was growing up in the 1950s, part of my childhood, incidentally, was spent in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin.
Oh, well, welcome back to Wisconsin via the radio.
This was back when Sun Prairie was a small town and there were a lot of cornfields between it and Madison. Right. I understand it's kind of a suburb of Madison now.
Pretty much.
But when I was a child there, at the age of 6, 7, 8, could go any place in town on my bicycle. There was no thought that parents were responsible to drive kids places or to take them to organize sports and so on. We had what we called Little League, but it was really kid-organized. It was a little bit more formal than the sandlot baseball that we normally played, but it was really still kid-organized, and there would be an adult umpire, a teenage umpire there for the games that we played. But for the most part, we just played on our own. We made up the rules as we went along, changed the rules to fit our needs. We had to negotiate all the differences. And if you were in the house too long, your mom would say, go out and play, get out of my hair, you know. So now mothers say something quite different typically. They say, you know, don't go out, stay in because it's dangerous out there. I mean, that, they may not say it in exactly those words, but that's the message. So when parents are interviewed today about why they don't allow their children outside, a lot of them are afraid some of the fears are sort of rational, fears of traffic and so on, but for the most part, the fears are fairly irrational, fears of child abduction, which is extremely rare and no more common today than it was in the 1950s. I think part of it is the media. You know, if a child abduction or some child murder occurs anywhere in the world, we tend to hear about it, and it's so we believe it's more common than it actually is. People don't know their neighbors as well as they used to, partly because everybody works. Most adults work away from home, so there's not the sense of neighborhood that there used to be. Adult friends tend to be the people they know from work rather than the people they know in the neighborhood. So with less of a sense of neighborhood, there's less of a sense of freedom to just let the kids go out and play with other kids. Once there are fewer kids out there, then it's less attractive for the kids who can go out and play because, you know, they're primarily attracted to other kids. If there's nobody else out there or very few other people out there, it's much less attractive for them to go out. So, therefore, they play maybe with on computers inside rather than going outside and playing socially.
We'll talk a little bit more about the causes and cures. But we have a number of listeners who want to get in on the conversation with questions or comments. So let me, Brandon on Facebook sent this email. He says, I have always believed kids learn through playing. I remember when I was young, I taught myself how to build forts and dam up the creek in the woods behind my mom's house. It taught me how to build different structures and channel water and where I need it for irrigation purposes. So you're learning a lot when you're playing.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is the constructive play that he's talking about, where children are out there making things, doing things, manipulating the environment, and learning about the world, learning firsthand, real practical physics in this case, in a way that's much more meaningful than if you were just learning it in the abstract in school. So that's part of the kind of learning. But the other kind of learning that occurs is social learning. If you're out there doing this with other kids, you've got to also learn how to compromise, how to work out, and how to negotiate so you're playing in the same way and getting along with each other, not sharing the materials that you're using. These are such important skills, and the evidence is that children are growing up not learning these kinds of skills to the degree that they did in the past.
Yeah. Judy in Ripon is with us next. Hello, Judy.
Hi. I'm not so much concerned. The professor had mentioned earlier about children doing homework and spending time shopping with their parents. That is not the big culprit. And I really am very thrilled that this guest is taking on this topic because it really needs to be emphasized. What I see around me that I've seen for the last 25 years of having four children is that competitive sports have gotten really out of control. We all, as a society, are valuing athletic prowess more than we are playtime. We're valuing that because everybody seems to think that their child is going to be the next Aaron Rodgers or the next Michael Jordan or whatever. And it's so much a factor of competitiveness between parents. I've had carloads of boys coming home from Noah's Ark and them saying to me, I don't want to be in baseball this year, but my dad is forcing me, and there's tournaments every Saturday and Sunday, and I don't have any downtime. And, you know, there's no way I'm going to approach the parents and say, you're really making a mistake, you know. But
yeah,
it's really become so out of control with us hyper-scheduling our children that I think neurophysiologically their brain can't possibly make the appropriate connections that they're supposed to make. And the other thing is that they're being sold a line. These kids are being told that they're not going to get into a good college unless they're in all these different sports, when in reality that's not what colleges are basing their application acceptance.
Judy, I'm glad you brought up this issue. Thanks very much. We have just a minute or so before a news break, Professor Gray. Scheduling your kid in organized sports isn't exactly the kind of playtime you're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, that's not even real play when you're in organized sports, because by definition, play is self-directed. Play is directed and chosen and directed by the players themselves. When you have an adult directing what to do, when you have an adult deciding on the rules and adults solving all the problems, then you're really taking away, you're removing what is the real value of social play, which is learning how to control yourself, learning how to get along with other people, learning how to solve your own problems. You know, not one in a thousand of those kids out there suited up to play some kind of organized sport is going to become a professional athlete. Far less than that is going to be. But every single one of them is going to grow up in a social world where they have to know how to solve their own problems, where they have to know how to get along with other people, where we don't live in an environment with a king who's going to step down and solve our problems for us. We live in a world in which we need to do that. And when we have adults directing children's play, supposed play is not really play in that case.
Yeah, we are going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about why play is so important for children.
Miss Susie had a tugboat. The tugboat had a bell, ding ding. Miss Susie went to heaven. The tugboat went to hello, operator. I'm calling number 9. And if you disconnect me, I'll chop off your behind the refrigerator.
Remember all the games we played as children and all the time we spent outdoors just playing. Playing and goofing off. We are talking about the importance of playtime for children, free playtime, and how that's declining in recent years and why that matters. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, October the 18th. We are talking with Peter Gray. He is Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College. He was guest editor of the current edition of the American Journal of Play. And we are talking about play because there's more and more evidence and attention on how all work and no play is resulting in kids who are more anxious and more depressed. Current issue of The Atlantic has an article on this as well. We welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Why is this happening and what can be done about it? And Professor Gray, before we go back to the phones, is there a minimum daily requirement of playtime that you recommend?
Well, not a minimum daily requirement, but I think that the answer to that is that there are differences among kids. Some kids need much more play than others. But we all kids need large amounts of time to play. I mean, think of it, you know, when I was growing up, basically all the time after school, all summer long, you know, we had some chores to do, but for the most part, from the time we got home after school until the time we needed to go to bed, we were outdoors playing. Mm-hmm. Weekends we were outdoors playing. All summers we were outdoors playing. There were less hours in school then. There was much less homework then than there is now, especially for, you know, there was no such thing really as homework for children in the lower grades. Now even children in the lower grades have homework. And kids less than 5 years old are often doing academic work. And they're as the previous caller pointed out, even when they're not in school, they're doing school-like things. They're under adult direction in various kinds of organized sports and organized classes and so on and so forth. So I think that we really ought to be thinking children's lives ought to be primarily play and exploration. That's what they're built for. That's how they really learn about the world around them. And the question should be, how much time do we need to take away from their play? Let's try to minimize that, rather than how much time should we schedule into their busy lives.
That's a good way to put it. JJ in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, JJ.
Good morning, Jibo. I cannot agree more with the guest. I think also that cultural backgrounds have to do with it. For example, I used to live in Milwaukee, and I lived in the East Side. I lived in Bayview. I lived in the Third Ward, and I lived on the South Side. And it's very different. What I saw was very, very different every time because, as I saw it, you know, children of Hispanic and Black and Asian backgrounds, for example, were encouraged to play outside and with each other. It's a way to socialize, like your guest is saying. It's a way to know your neighbors' parents, know your neighbors' cousins, know your kids, you know, the kids that you're playing all over the place, and know your neighborhood in it, you know, as well. It's a way to know everything around you, how to socialize and how to grow up knowing people. You know, when I grew up in Puerto Rico, in the center of the city, and we would know all my parents' cousins, all my parents' cousins' cousins, and all my grandpa's, you know, siblings and everything. And not only that, but we would play around the city. Our playground was around the city, not in front of the TV, not as organized as sports or anything.
Yeah.
And it's very different here.
JJ, I'm wondering, when you said there's a lot of cultural, you know, differences, that you say you witnessed the children of various minority groups playing outside and together, but you're not noticing that with white kids?
No, not a lot, not a whole lot, especially on upper-class neighborhoods. Like when I lived on the East Side, it was that was a very common denominator. I would only see white kids, and you know, I know I don't mean to sound like I'm shunning a different background, but that was what I saw. That was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now I live in Madison in the Maple Bluff, and it's exactly the same thing. It's children being overprotected, children being put on organized sports, like your guest and a previous caller were saying. And perfect example is my partner's siblings, who have children that are way over schedule. And that not only interrupts the kids' interaction with their families, but also my partner's siblings with, you know, interacting with each other. And that's not how they grew up. It's just different.
Thank you very much, JJ. Well, Professor Gray, is this primarily an issue with upper class white parents and their children?
Well, I think more and more it's cutting across classes, but the caller makes a good point. It is more an issue with middle class and upper class families that have sort of in some ways taken the lead in scheduling children's lives and have also expressed much more concern and fear about children being outdoors, even though they're living in the safer neighborhoods. It is true that when you are in neighborhoods where people live in apartments rather than big houses, you know, the temptation is to go outside and play, partly because the apartment is small. So you want to get outside, and there's a higher concentration of kids. So I think it is definitely true. I see it around here, too, that in neighborhoods where people live closer together, where families are larger, you do see more kids outdoors playing.
Yeah, and we mentioned the overprotectiveness of parents, the maybe irrational fear of some parents not wanting their kids to be outside unsupervised. But they're also overscheduling kids in all of these different activities because they think that is going to help their child succeed as an adult and be successful. Isn't that part of it?
Of course it is, yes. They believe that. They believe people already, by time a child is 7 or 8 years old, they're worried about, you know, building the child's resume. My goodness, you know, the purpose of childhood in many parents' views these days, they wouldn't put it exactly in these terms, but essentially the way they see it is the purpose of childhood is to build a resume to get into college. So, there, you know, free play doesn't count on a resume. You can't put it down. But if you're in some kind of organized sport, they believe maybe they're preparing their child to be able to make a high school team at some point, and that being on a high school varsity team is going to look good on a college resume. In truth, this has very little effect on college admissions, and it's only a tiny, tiny percent of kids who are going to get athletic scholarships. But yet, many parents act as if this is part of the whole college admissions process. So that's definitely part of it.
Mary Beth on Facebook writes, children are safer today because we put more emphasis on protecting them, but it comes with a cost. Play dates and organized activities are well-intentioned, but leave children with less opportunity to explore, solve problems, create, feel free, and be independent. So, are play dates a part of this structured playtime that you think is not so good?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost sad to use the word play date, that we have to schedule our children to play at a particular time, a particular place, with a particular person, kind of under adult supervision, you know. Let me contrast. I mean, we so greatly underestimate children in our culture, underestimate their capacities. Let me just give a little bit of a contrast for perspective. I was just recently reading an article by Mary Martini, who's an anthropologist, who, based on her studies of children in the Marquesian Islands, and this was a study done about 15 or 20 years ago, a very careful observational study. She was studying children between the age of 2 and 5, children who are not yet in school. While their older siblings are in school and their mothers are working, these kids are playing by themselves, age 2 to 5. The 5-year-olds are taking care of the 2 and 3-year-olds. The 4 and 5-year-olds are taking care of the 2 and 3-year-olds. But they're doing it in the context of play. They're playing out on cliffs. They're playing near the ocean. They're playing without any adults around watching them. And yet, in all of her observations, she never saw a child get seriously hurt. She saw lots of squabbles. She saw lots of little arguments. But in the end, they would always settle it. They would never run and find an adult to settle the problem. She found that these kids were extraordinarily emotionally stable and happy kids. And here they are, 2 to 5 years old, playing by themselves in kind of the dangerous setting. She said that she saw kids playing with machetes and playing with matches. And when she asked adults about that, they said, oh, no, yeah, they know how to do it. They know, I'm not worried about their safety. But if the adults took these things away, it was because they were worried that they would waste the matches or they would ruin the machete, not that they were going to hurt themselves with it. So, you know, contrast that to our view, where even a 12-year-old we don't allow to go out and play with other 12-year-olds. Here we've got 2 to 5-year-olds. And this was, you know, it wasn't quite like that when I was a kid, but it was much closer. By the time I was 5, I could go any place in town, and I wasn't unusual. So over the years, we have come to think of children as incompetent, and it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. If we don't allow them to be able to solve their own problems and learn to get along without adult direction, then they don't learn how to do it. And so then we say, oh, lo and behold, you know, the kids are fighting or they're hurting themselves and so on when we aren't directing them. But that's partly because they haven't learned how to do this, because we haven't allowed them to do that.
Our guest is Peter Gray, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College, the guest editor of the current edition of the American Journal of Play. And we are talking about the importance of playtime for children, why it is declining, and why that can have some serious consequences. And we're welcoming your questions and your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have also linked to our Facebook page and to our website. A current issue of The Atlantic, an article about the lack of playtime for children and why it matters. Checking our weather forecast for today, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers in northern Wisconsin. There's a slight chance of rain elsewhere. Highs today in the low 40s in northwestern Wisconsin, the low 50s in the southeast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 18th. Coming up after 5 today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins, the Occupy Wall Street movement, the president's jobs plan, the sluggish economy. Ben Marins will talk with economic forecaster Gerald Celente about these topics and much more, coming up after 5 this afternoon. Then coming up after 7 this morning, we will talk with the leaders of the Republican Party of Wisconsin and the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. We'll get two takes on the planned attempt to recall Governor Scott Walker. That's coming up after 7. Right now, we're talking about why playing is serious business. Our guest says that kids today are not getting enough free playtime, and we're talking about why that matters and what we should do about it. Peter Gray is our guest. He is an emeritus professor of psychology at Boston College. You can join in 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Brian in Monona emails, can your guest discuss the relationship between lack of play and the child obesity and diabetes epidemic? When I was growing up, there were very few fat kids in grade school. Today, it seems like at least half the kids I see are overweight. Is that a part of your concern too, Professor Gray?
Yes, it is. I haven't emphasized that so much in my own research because there's a certain sense in which that's altogether too obvious. I mean, there's no mystery here. Kids exercise by running around, you know, chasing one another around playfully. I mean, I remember endless games. We would run until our sides split, chasing one another around in the neighborhood. You get enormous amounts of exercise that way. Contrast that to children who are in an organized sport where most of the time they're sort of sitting, waiting their turn. If they're running, they're running under adult direction, which is not fun for most kids. That's, you know, kids are not meant to exercise by running laps or, you know, lifting weights or going to a gym. They're built to exercise by just playfully running around and playing chase games. Children all over the world play chase games almost endlessly, both boys and girls. And that's how kids keep physically fit.
I remember. I'm almost amazed because when I was a kid, I remember biking. Like there's this lake that was like 7 miles away from our house. We would bike there. We'd go swim all day long and play all day long at this lake, then bike back and then stay out all night playing Capture the Flag, which was a street right. game that we played in our neighborhood. And, I mean, you were out of the house on a summer day from early morning until it was dark out, just running around.
That's right. I think that when we talk about childhood obesity today, we put a little too much emphasis on the bad diet. You know, we had pretty bad diets back in the 1950s, too. We were much less, you know, people ate fat. People ate, kids ate all sorts of sugary kinds of things. We had bad foods then. It isn't the change in food. It's the decline in outdoor exercise. The other thing is, you know, when you're outdoors playing, you're not eating. You know,
right.
If you're indoors, you've got food available. So whatever it is you're doing, watching television or doing your homework or whatever it is, you can be eating at the same time. But if you're outdoors running around, not only are you burning up calories, but you're not eating while you're doing it. And when kids were outdoors all day long, you know, sometimes you would miss lunch because you didn't want to leave play. So not only did we exercise more, but we ate less because we were outdoors playing.
We have Sandy in Madison with us now. Hello, Sandy.
Good morning.
Morning.
From what I've noticed of, you know, being a child and then raising children is when just like you're saying, that when we were growing up, we were allowed to play outside, make our own rules, and solve our own problems. Now children are being so constrained as young children. But when they become teenagers, it seems like parents just say, well, they're at a certain age, they can just find their own, run their own lives. And it seems like they don't have the social skills, even as teenagers. But they've never had that learning right from wrong and solving problems. Oh. I think that's a huge problem.
Interesting.
That I see with my teenagers and their friends.
So the littler kids are too constrained, and Sandy sees maybe that teens have too much freedom and they really didn't learn from their play when they were younger.
I think that's a good point. I think it's, you know, that at some point, parents have no choice. They've got to let the kids go, you know. At some point, your kid, you just are not going to be able to have your kid do exactly what you tell them to do. And so if the kids are not prepared, because they haven't been, they haven't had responsibility to run their own lives as small kids and learn how to do that, they have difficulty handling that. We also see that in a number of respects. I'm, of course, a college professor, recently retired from teaching. But one thing that I and my colleagues have seen over the years is that kids are coming to college kind of burned out from studying. We see students in college are studying less and less and socializing more and more because they really have been deprived of socialization. It's as if all the pressure now is getting them into college, and then once they're in college, they're really not learning very much anyway. The amount of study in college is actually less. The average amount of study for the typical college student in college these days is actually less than the amount of homework for kids in high schools. There's some data on that. So this is a real change. Kids are not learning how to control themselves. And so now, once they're in college, no longer with an adult following them around telling them what to do, many of them are more or less out of control. And, they're wasting their time in college in terms of the learning experience.
We're almost out of time, Professor Gray. I meant to ask you about, we're talking about playtime for children. Should grown-ups get some playtime too?
Well, of course. I mean, play, you know, the unique thing about the human species is that we play not just in our juvenile phase, as other mammals do, but we also are playful in adulthood. And play is still important for friendships, making friends, pursuing our own interests. Fewer people today have real hobbies. People work, and then they come home and plop in front of the television. This is true of adults, just as it is true of kids who are going to school and then coming home and plopping in front of the... You know, people don't allow themselves time and opportunity to pursue interests that are just fun for them. And I think that accounts for a lot of unhappiness in adulthood also, and a lot of the stress that occurs in adulthood. Some employers are beginning to realize that a playful work environment, especially in the computer industry, people are realizing that leads to much more productive workers, more creativity on the job, and so on.
Very quick comment from Dale on Facebook. We love our grandchildren, so we throw them out of the house on a regular basis. Is that a good advice?
That's wonderful. Good for them. I wish more people did that.
Thank you so much for being with us. Peter Gray, Emeritus Professor of Psychology at Boston College, guest editor of the current edition of the American Journal of Play. And as he mentioned, he spent some time growing up in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Thanks very much to Rob Fair, to Bill Martins, and to Amanda Magnus for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.